Hello and welcome to Context India. I'm Faye D'Souza, coming to you from Mumbai. On Context India, we take the time to deliver a considered analysis of this country, its politics and its people. In each episode in this series, we're taking a close look at a specific facet of what has perhaps been the biggest crisis India has faced since independence, the COVID pandemic. This, our fourth and final episode, we are examining the Indian healthcare sector that crumbled under the pressure of the second wave of COVID-19. We will be looking at issues of insufficient investment in public healthcare, the severe shortage of oxygen in many parts of the country, and India's vaccine policy. I'll be speaking with K. Sujata Rao, former Secretary of Health for the Government of India, and Sudhanshu Mittal, National Spokesperson of the BJP. At the close of this week's episode will be an excerpt from a piece of pandemic art, music created in India through the COVID months. This week, we're featuring Punjabi indie singer Vipul Verma. In April and May 2021, Indian social media space was flooded with messages like these. The second wave of COVID in India was wreaking havoc, and it seemed as though the country's healthcare system was going under. On the 1st of May 2021, these were the tweets being posted by hospitals in the capital, New Delhi.
We have just run out of oxygen. We are currently surviving on some oxygen cylinders. Over the next 10 minutes, that will also run out.
About half an hour after this video message was issued by the executive director of a private hospital in New Delhi, 12 patients there died when the oxygen ran out. It wasn't the first time during the second wave that a lack of oxygen resulted in deaths. The Delta variant of the coronavirus turbocharged the spread of COVID in India in the first half of 2021. Healthcare systems around the world had struggled with the virus. In 2020, there were stories of medics in New York wearing garbage bags as PPE. In the UK, in January 2021, soldiers were deployed to chronically understaffed intensive care wards. In the same month, regions in Brazil struggled with oxygen shortages and critically low hospital capacity. However, the crisis in India's healthcare sector was of a magnitude the country hadn't seen before. The Delta variant alone doesn't explain the seeming collapse of so many hospitals at the most crucial phase of the pandemic.
The Indian healthcare system had several weaknesses even before the COVID pandemic struck. It did have some strengths in the sense that a rural primary healthcare system was established right after independence, but it was very inadequately resourced and over a period of time failed to serve the functions it needed to. Urban primary healthcare system was still neglected right from the very beginning under the false premise that there would be adequate number of doctors in urban areas to serve the urban population.
So the healthcare system in India is really a paradox between a weak, underfunded and neglected public health system and the private sector that is growing constantly. There is also very deep dependence on the private sector, which caters to a very large proportion of healthcare delivery in the country. So what we've really ended up with is, on one hand, very suboptimal care that is provided through a weakened public health system. And on the other hand, we have the private sector, which operates obviously on a profit-driven model and is operating in a regulatory vacuum.
Compared with many other countries, India weathered the first wave of COVID well. The government implemented the largest lockdown in the world, which, despite creating chaos due to its sudden announcement, helped contain case numbers. What happened after the first wave, however, very likely contributed to the intensity of the second wave.
It was in the second wave that the biggest challenge was thrown at India's health system. a combination of several factors. First of all, we had several weaknesses in the health system. The level of preparation that we mounted in the latter half of 2020 in terms of temporary hospitals started becoming dismantled. And then we also saw the center-state coordination becoming fragmented and frayed because of a variety of reasons, not the least of which was that because election fever was on and the virus superhighway to travel across India with the large crowds gathering for festivals, for religious gatherings, and for elections. And at this time, the variants also came in.
A key element of the global COVID response strategy has been immunization drives. India's vaccine manufacturing capacity is one of the highest in the world, and supplies from India were a crucial factor in the plans put together by many countries for their own vaccination campaigns.
And today, the world is proud of this. जिस वाकई भारत ने दुनिया के मानव जाति की रक्षा करने में बहुत बड़ी अहम भूमिका निभाई।
The COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access, or COVAX program, backed by the World Health Organization and UNICEF, signed agreements with India in August and September 2020 for 200 million doses of vaccine medication. In February 2021, the Director General of the WHO tweeted this. By mid-April 2021, India had donated and sold a combined of a total of 66 million doses to nearly 100 countries. India's domestic vaccination drive in the early months of 2021 had been slow compared to other countries. But the second wave demanded action. On the 25th of March, India halted all exports of vaccines. Those supplies were needed to meet domestic demand. Bringing the immunization network up to full capacity in a short period of time was not easy, though.
There were many changes that were made to the vaccination policy. And along the way, there were many missteps. There was, of course, lack of preparation when it came to the production of the vaccine, which led to a situation of shortages and slowed down the immunization drive at the early stages. Another controversial aspect of the vaccination policy has been how the government has chosen to, at various points, involve the private sector. So that's private hospitals specifically in vaccination.
That policy announced in mid-April 2021 meant the private hospitals were allowed to purchase and administer vaccines. By August, however, the Health Minister Mansukh Mandavia reported in Parliament that only 7-9% of the vaccines reserved for private healthcare companies were being utilised. A key reason for the lack of uptake was cost. Many Indians were reluctant to pay high prices being charged by private hospitals for vaccines that were being administered for free by the state. Less than 6 months since the peak of the second wave of COVID in the country, India's immunization drive had made up a remarkable amount of ground. According to government data, at the start of October 2021, 925 million doses had been administered in the country. In an effort to expand distribution, drones were being tried out to deliver vaccines to remote locations. And with domestic production capabilities having increased, India was able to resume exporting vaccines.
There are some strengths to India's vaccination drive, which is one of the largest in the world. For one, it has created very high levels of awareness about COVID and COVID vaccination in the public. Another positive outcome is that due to the sheer scale of the drive, a lot of healthcare workers and other kind of district administrators and staff, even in remote areas, have been enlisted and have been working closely for the success of the program. We've also achieved to some degree, the capability of strengthening the cold chain for distribution of the vaccines.
While the scale and strength of India's vaccination network has been noteworthy, the second wave exposed the chronic underinvestment and inequalities in the country's healthcare system overall. In the aftermath, specialists and policy advisors have advocated a boost in state funding.
Over the past few decades, we have seen public financing of health stagnate around 1% of the gross domestic product. It has risen now in the recent years. There is still a high out-of-pocket spending that is incurred by a number of people, resulting in poverty. So we do need much greater health financing, at least 3% of the GDP as public financing of healthcare. Without that, all the vital elements of the health system, which need to function effectively, whether it is infrastructure, equipment, drugs and supplies, and particularly the health workforce, will not fall into place.
COVID devastated numerous countries, but India's experience, especially during the second wave, was one of the most shocking pandemic ordeals. The COVID impact, both in the short and the long term, will be significant, especially so in the healthcare sector. And so I'm discussing the challenges India faces with K. Sujata Rao, former Secretary of Health for the Government of India, and Sudhanshu Mittal, National Spokesperson of the BJP. Welcome to Context India. My first question is to the both of you. India has an admirable record when dealing with the likes of polio, smallpox. Why is it then that we weren't able to deal with the pandemic better? Ms. Rao?
Yeah, you are right, absolutely, that, you know, we did a tremendous job in dealing with those two pandemics and also in HIV/AIDS. And we've done well in TB and malaria and other viral infections. But this pandemic really came in as a surprise because it was very, very infectious and also very lethal. And we were really caught off guard.
Mr. Mittal, my opening question to you as well. Given India's expertise in dealing with health pandemics, why didn't India deal with the pandemic better?
If you look at the enormity of the pandemic, it's not just India. This pandemic took the entire world by surprise. If you look at the developed economies, developed countries, look at how many deaths they had. Look at how many cases they had and look at how many case deaths which took place in India. So to say that India did not handle it is, you know, erroneous, because this is something which was completely unknown to the entire world. And if you look at casualties elsewhere, given the size of the Indian population and the casualty, or the number of cases and the size of the population, India did fairly well. I mean, certainly, you know, on a comparative scale, India did brilliantly. Look at the number of vaccinations India has been able to achieve. So in the perspective, if you look at how things have happened and how India has done, I think we've done an admirable job.
Mr. Mittal, your argument that this was an unknown may have been true in the first wave of 2020, but in the second wave of 2021, we had a very clear idea of what this virus was and how it moved around. And let me, if I may please, call out some statistics. According to the UN Human Development Report 2020, India ranked 155 out of 167 countries on hospital bed availability. According to data by the Union Health Ministry, March 17, 2020, we had one doctor per 11,600 Indians. These statistics show that we could have been better prepared if our healthcare was stronger, which it was not, Mr. Mittal.
Fine, there are two different things you are addressing. One is the infrastructure of the country. Now, the infrastructure of a country is never built in 6 months or 1 year or 2 years. So yes, India, given its population and given its economy, has inadequacy in the infrastructure. There is no denial on that. The issue is, how did we deal with the second wave? I mean, these are proportions which nobody could in the world anticipate. There is an infrastructure issue because India, being a developing economy, has its limitation. But looking at the infrastructure which was available and looking at the vaccination which has been done, the vaccination program has been so successful, and that has led to the containment of what could have been the third wave.
Ms. Rao, do you agree with Mr. Mittal's argument here?
I'm afraid I'll have to respectfully disagree. Yes, this was a new virus that really hit us very sharply, and we were a little unprepared for such an attack, and much more unprepared for the second attack, which is, of course, unforgivable, given the fact that not only had we gone through wave one, but we also saw a new variant had popped up in between. And the UK was suffering hugely again with the backlash of that in December. So we ought to have expected the second wave and got ourselves ready. There was undeniably a lot of complacency that drove the second wave disaster. Now, why I disagree is that, yes, it's true that the health system is weak in India, it's fragile, largely because of the political neglect over the last 77 years, whatever, from 1947, because the amount we spend on it is so minuscule and it continues to be. But if you ask me one reason why we failed to do as well as we could have, and we had the capacity and the knowledge to do better, was because of the failure of the public health cadre not being there, public health leadership not being there in India. It was literally driven by technical people who are not public health specialists, advising the PM, advising the policymakers, and they made several missteps which could easily have been foreseen by any public health expert. So, you know, there were some mistakes made and we paid dearly for that. And at least now, what I worry about statements made by political leaders like Mr. Mittal is, when you feel that, oh, it was overwhelming and we did very well, it's a nice feel-good factor that, okay, we battled it out. But in that, we forget that we need to see that it never happens again. But as a point, I would like to say that I think we need to be more humbled by the experience we've gone through. Many of the deaths and suffering could have been avoided. We had the capacity and the knowledge in India to have done better if only the public health leadership was allowed its space. And if that lesson is learned, then I would say this experience is not lost on us.
Mr. Mittal, during the second wave, people weren't just dying of COVID. They were reportedly dying of a shortage of oxygen and a shortage of hospital beds. What responsibility does the central government bear for that?
You know, as I said, the inadequate health infrastructure is a legacy issue. Really, to apportion it to the government of the day would be most unfair. You don't make hospital beds in a day. I mean, it's not like putting up a tent. The government did well in not only the central government. I would say all the state governments did equally well in trying to augment the medical availability of beds. See, when you are planning, you look at the first wave, 8,000 cases a day is maximum. You would say, probably, what can it go to? It can go to 12,000, it can go to 14,000, it can go to 16,000. You don't anticipate that it will go to 38,000 or 40,000 cases a day in a city like Delhi. When you give the statistics of doctors per million population or beds, yes, it is a fact. This country has inadequate infrastructure because it's a developing country. It has limited resources. These resources are spread over all sectors. But how did we respond to the challenge is the most important issue. Yes, there was an oxygen shortage because nobody anticipated that this kind of an oxygen requirement could be there. I'm not saying BJP government did this, the opposition government did this. No, I'm not getting into that at all, because I think every government, realizing the enormity of the situation, made its best effort to really tackle the issue, which they did. They were delays. Yes, there were delays. As I said, there's no benchmark of perfection. Yes, things could always have been better for everything. But was there sincerity? Yes, there was sincerity. Was there a genuine effort? Yes, there was a genuine effort. Was ultimately the effort succeeded? Yes, that is it.
I take it to Ms. Rao, who has worked with the health ministry for over two decades. Ms. Rao, if you want to respond to Mr. Mittal's point that it was no way to predict the number of cases that our cities actually saw creep up on a daily basis.
You know, Faye, it is a fact, and I agree with him there, that you can never really, a health system can only be expanded or readied up to a point. Even the best health system, like Italy had, was overflowing with patients onto the streets, is largely because the way in which this variant really hit us were far more cases than the system could cope with. Yes, it's true that you could never expect the kind of demand for oxygen that came up due to COVID. It was way beyond expectations and our ability to be ready. But we ought to have been ready. The problem is that our modeling was so poorly done because data was not put out. So we didn't have good modeling. And that went to bring in the complacence, saying wave one ke baad, everything is okay, there's nothing to worry. And wave two was not expected. And that's where we failed. And that's the reason why we ought to be transparent and give the data out, because only the country can only benefit by more data being made available in the public domain, so better research comes in. The kind of modeling exercises that were based on which decisions were taken is truly appalling and completely indefensible. So yes, it was overwhelming. I do agree 40,000 cases a day is something that, that you know, every day so many patients coming in was difficult, but was the effort adequate? No, it was not. And had we been aware that this kind of calamity could happen, we would have been better prepared like we are now for third wave. This kind of preparation is what we ought to have done when we got that window, thanks to the COVID cases coming down from November, December, January, February, the 4 months. That was a wasted opportunity.
Mr. Mittal, a question for you, and I'm reading out of the New York Times dated September 14, 2021, which said senior officials from the government forced scientists at elite institutions to downplay the threat of COVID to prioritize Mr. Modi's political goals. What is your response to this?
I think it is a typical case of venom being spewed. New York Times has never questioned the US government when it came to 7.5 lakh deaths in US.
New York Times has questioned its government. I believe that's a factual error.
You know, verbosity comes very easy. I can make any kind of allegations. It must be something which is backed by an empirical evidence. It is backed by something. A mere statement being quoted by New York Times becomes gospel truth. So when we look at ourselves, we look at ourselves with facts and figures. I am thankful to Sujata ji to concede that these were not things which could have been anticipated.
Ms. Rao, I'll come back to you to respond to Mr. Mittal. Do you also believe that the government did a fair job in making those decisions?
You know, I wouldn't want to get into this blame game. I do feel that even the best of us, if we were there, there would have been some element of confusion and delays because of the nature of the pandemic and the way it rolled out. But having said that, there were some situations that could have been averted, as I said, if they'd had a far more inclusive and more transparent way of decision making and discussion. And even in a vaccine policy, I agree with Mr. Mittal, we have done very well. I mean, it is amazing that we've been able to cover 900 million people with a single shot. But only 25% of our population has two shots, which is full protection. So there is a long way to go. And we could have achieved a much better, the previous ambition of the Prime Minister to have us all vaccinated completely by December could have been realized had we did what we did in April, had we done it way back last year in November itself. And in January 4th, when the two vaccines were approved, we could have placed orders. And there were so many other steps that could have been taken up at that time.
My question to Mr. Mittal, of all of the decisions being made by government now, do you think we are adequately prepared for a third wave of anything else that might hit our public health sector?
I think the proof of the pudding is in its eating. While the third wave has hit a lot of countries, how it is affecting India is for everybody to see. And the reason why it has been contained is largely because of the vaccination program which the country has undertaken. I would also say that because of the third wave being contained, it has given the nation a confidence that the resolve of fighting a menace like a pandemic can be successfully solved if you have the resolve and the determination which the government, which the country has shown. And I'm very optimistic that the lessons which this unexpected, hitherto unknown disease has given the nation, those lessons have been well understood, well learned, and the government and the people of this country are prepared for it.
Thank you both for speaking to us and for giving us your time. And finally, there are a multitude of artists in India who created work through the long months of the pandemic. We wanted to feature some of the varied languages they work in and the perspectives they bring. This week, we're closing with an excerpt of a song in Punjabi titled Mahamari, which translates to pandemic. It was written and performed by Vipul Varma. Thank you for watching Context India here on Al Jazeera English. ਇਟਲੀ ਅਮਰੀਕਾ ਸਪੇਨ ਨੀ ਉਹ ਸਾਰੇ ਘਰਾਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਬੰਦ ਸੁਣੇ ਵੇੜੇ ਤੱਕ ਦੇ ਹਾਏ ਕਿੰਨਿਆਂ ਦੀ ਜਾਨ ਲੈ ਲਈ ਮਹਾਮਾਰੀ ਨੇ ਹੋਰ ਕਿੰਨਿਆਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਦਾ ਤਾਂ ਨੇੜੇ ਲੱਗਦੇ ਕਿੰਨਿਆਂ ਦੀ ਜਾਨ ਲੈ ਲਈ ਮਹਾਮਾਰੀ ਨੇ ਹੋਰ ਕਿੰਨਿਆਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਦਾ ਤਾਂ ਨੇੜੇ ਲੱਗਦੇ
ਲੁੱਟ ਕੇ ਨਹੀਂ ਫਰਾਰ ਹੋ ਗਏ, ਕਾਰਡ ਰਾਸ਼ਨ ਤਾਂ ਸਾਡੇ ਜੀ ਸ਼ਿਕਾਰ ਹੋ ਗਏ, ਹੋ ਪਾਸਪੋਰਟ ਕਿੰਨੇ ਹੀ ਫਰਾਰ ਹੋ ਗਏ, ਕਾਰਡ ਰਾਸ਼ਨ ਤਾਂ ਸਾਡੇ ਜੀ ਸ਼ਿਕਾਰ ਹੋ ਗਏ, ਗਰੀਬ ਬੰਦਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਪੈ ਗਈ ਕੈਸੀ ਵਿਪਤਾ, ਬੰਦਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਪੈ ਗਈ ਕੈਸੀ ਵਿਪਤਾ, ਘਰ ਦੂਰ ਲੱਗੇ ਨੇੜੇ ਸ਼ਮਸ਼ਾਨ ਹੋ ਗਏ।